Good afternoon. I'm going to call the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology for May 18th, 2017 to order.
We don't have a quorum, though, right?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay. Senator Riley, members of the committee, today we have one item on the agenda, an informational meeting from the Office of the State CIO. The focus will be on the State Data Center. There are a variety of power and build-out issues that they're going to come forward and talk with the committee about. So if you could come forward, and please remember to introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, committee. My name is Sandy Wheeler. I am the administrator for the State Data Center, ETF. We're happy to be here. Let me start this. Okay. Where to go? Happy to be here today to talk to you about the State Data Center and some of the power constraints that we have that we're working under right now. Back when the data center was first designed, a decision was made to limit the initial capital outlay by sizing the core infrastructure at 50%, meaning that the cooling, the generators, the electrical components were all sized to accommodate about 50% of the total floor space. Because of the age and the number of physical servers that were initially moved into the SDC by the 11 first agencies that moved in, by the time that 11th agency moved in, the state data center staff were already starting to monitor the electrical draw that was happening on the data center floor. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what we mean when we say we're running out of power. That's usually the way we frame this up, when we say we're running out of power at the state data center. So as equipment is brought into the state data center, it's plugged into what we call a power distribution unit. We currently have 10 power distribution units that are sitting on the data center floor, and they distribute power to the servers, the network switches, storage, backup devices, everything that we have supporting our agencies. You know, a way to think of this for me anyway is it's like the circuit breaker in your house. You start overloading it, you're going to have circuits trip. So we have to very closely monitor what we're plugging into those PDUs to make sure that they can handle what we've got. The PDUs are supported by two UPSs. Those are in place to ensure that if we have electrical power issues, we can continue to run off battery. We have enough battery power to basically run all of our systems for about 7 minutes. Those 7 minutes give us enough time to start up the generators and get them running. So we have two generators which are sized to basically support everything that's upstream of them. As I mentioned, each of these are sized proportionately to support the units that go in front of them. And so from the PDUs all the way back to the generators. So the computer systems that we have on the data center floor right now take up about 50% of that floor space. And so basically, we take up 50% of the floor space, but we're utilizing 100% of these systems that I've just talked about. So that's when we say we're running at full power, is because we have 50% of the data center floor that's empty, but our infrastructure can't support the other 50% that we have sitting vacant. In addition to the electrical, we also have to think about the cooling component of this. So we bring in more equipment, the building gets hotter, we need to be able to address the heat. Computers don't like it too warm. So we have to make sure that in addition to when we talk about the power, we're also talking about the cooling infrastructure of the building. That was also sized to 50%. So when we upgrade the power, if we're approved to upgrade the power, we would also be looking at the cooling infrastructure as well. So this slide, really, I just wanted to show a little bit about the history and the work that ETS has done to compensate for the power challenges that we've had over time, as well as to be good stewards of the assets that we've been entrusted with. So as I mentioned, in 2006, when the agency started moving in their equipment, we did what was called the lift and drop. So we took all the equipment that was sitting in these 11 agencies' data center, we lifted them up and dropped them into the state data center. So at that time, the equipment was already pretty aged within the agencies, and it was also a variety of manufacturers. As we all know, the older equipment is not as energy efficient as it is today, and so, as I mentioned, by the time that last agency was moving in, we were already starting to supply the SDC stakeholders with power monitoring reports because we were getting so close to that peak. So in 2008, the agency staff, along with ETS, worked in partnership to migrate their systems into what we call a virtualized environment. And that was basically taking their old physical servers and putting them into a virtualized environment. When I think about a physical server, it's basically one server, one application. And what we were doing is moving them to a virtual environment where we take one server and virtualize it into multiple servers and multiple applications on one box. So that gave us quite a bit of efficiencies, and you'll start to see that it lessened our draw on the power that we were needing. During 2011 and 2014, we continued to see normal growth through IT projects going on in the agencies. But as we got into 2014, we again started getting really close to that peak. So that was when we started this phase of looking at opportunities to, again, bring that power draw down, changes in technology, and we went into what we call a converged compute environment, or we refer to it as our UCP system. The UCP system basically takes the servers, the storage, and the network and combines them into one platform, which we call a pod. We have two pods sitting on the data center floor right now. In 2016, we started again experiencing rapid growth. This was due to agency projects, the one system for DHS, revenues transformation to modernization systems, in addition to bringing in some additional agencies that wanted to now be customers of the state data center, such as the Marine Board and Dogami. So again, we're starting to see that rise in our demand on electrical. So our last kind of step right now is we are actually initiating a project to what we call recover some stranded capacity. So basically, I talked about those PDU, those power distribution units. So they all have, I call it a little sliver of power left in each of them, which alone isn't enough. By moving cables around, we are going to be able to free up maybe 1.5 of those PDUs to basically get out the last of the power that we have. The risk in that, of course, is that the PDUs that are remaining are going to be at 100%. But again, we are getting so close to that line now that this is kind of our last effort to give us a little more time, because the agencies are continuing to see growth in their IT needs, and so we need to be able to provide that. So we're trying to capture that stranded capacity and make use of the last remaining power we have out of those PDUs. So speaking of demand, so a number of agencies have been working with ETS to explore moving into the state data centers. We've been in conversations with the Youth Authority, with State Library, and with DCBS. Each of them has requested to be a customer of the state data center. With each request, we have to look at the number of servers they have, the kind of space they would need, power draw that they would take on our system. So we can't just say, come in, we're ready to take you on. We have to actually do that analysis before we agree to move them into the state data center. Moving these agencies in obviously would create an additional strain. That's why we're looking at getting as much capacity as we can out of our systems, our electrical systems right now. We've had several agencies that come to us asking about co-location services. Right now, we can't support those. Again, it's just we have to make sure we have power for our existing customers to keep their systems running. So that's kind of the situation that we're in today. So I think I'll now turn it over to Tony, who is going to discuss facilities across the state, as well as our proposal to address the power situation.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Tony Black, State Chief Technology Officer, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the project today. But before I do that, I wanted to bring back a slide that you've seen before and talk a little bit more specifically about what these numbers represent. As you can see from this graphic, there was 106 data centers reported to the offices of the state CIO in response to a survey that was conducted. And of these 106 data centers that that was represented representative of the 49 responses we got to that survey, 29 of those 49 responses were executive branch state agencies, and 9 of those reported multiple data centers. The other 20 respondents were boards and commissions, of which 10 of those 20 reported no servers, no data centers. So just to kind of put that number in context, first of all, also, data center was loosely defined for the purposes of that survey as any area or space that was housing a server. And you can see on there the 2,024 servers that were reported in those spaces. Some of those respondents reported one server in 2 square feet, and another one was 2 servers in 8 square feet. Just to give you some context around data servers, we were really talking about closets or partitioned off office spaces or whatever. And out of that 106, with only 49 respondents, I would say that just roughly speaking, that that's probably only 25 to 50% of the inventory we have across the state with that definition. And if you put a definition around data center that was more of a purpose-built space, then we would probably have 25 to 50% of that 106 really across the state. So we're only talking about, from a return on investment perspective, about a small percentage of that 106, and recognizing that that's not all-inclusive of the state assets related to data centers. So, and again, just for context, the average, if you look at the average of that 18,000 square feet reported across those 106 data centers and do the math, it's really just about 170 square feet per room on average, whereas in the data center, in the state data center, we're talking about 15,690 square feet and being the only real purpose-built and redundant data center in the state. So there's a couple things to talk about in terms of building out power with the assumption that we were going to move some of these servers and infrastructure into the state data center. There's certainly a conversation around the benefits that we would receive for the cost. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, and then later on I'll be talking a little bit about our return on investment. If you notice here, there are some outliers worth talking about here in terms of their candidacy for moving into the data center and contributing to an ROI. And the first one that jumps out there is Oregon Youth Authority with 35 servers. And why would an agency that size need 35 servers? But the reality of it is, with the kind of spaces we're talking about, Youth Authority has presence in each of the 36 counties, and they use ETS here locally in Marion County. But when you start thinking about what good candidates are to move into the data center, I look at these remote locations in a couple different respects. First of all, and we had this conversation last week here around bandwidth and broadband, is that if you don't have sufficient bandwidth to get adequate a user experience out in these remote sites, we probably shouldn't be moving their servers into the data center right away. And there are some critical life, health, safety remote sites out there that we want to keep the data and the compute close to those users. And if not, and we have sufficient bandwidth to move them back to to the Salem here that we also have some kind of resiliency or redundancy built in so that we don't experience outages in those remote sites. So certainly for the Youth Authority, and I can speak from experience with one of those counties in Lane County, what the Youth Authority down there has for presence in Lane County is a rack in one of the Lane County data centers at Youth Services. And it basically houses a couple servers and the necessary switch gear for that region to communicate with the juvenile justice information system. So 35 rooms reported from Oregon Youth Authority in the short term might be good candidates to leave right where they are. On the flip side of the coin, when we've got boards and commissions that have very small spaces carved out, maybe it's a closet, maybe it's a piece of an office space, where you might have some personally identifiable information or some other sensitive data, it may make more sense, even though it will not contribute positively to a return on investment. From a benefit perspective, it may be prudent to move those servers into the data center, simply if for no other reason, for physical security, data backup, and disaster recovery perspectives. If you think about 106 data centers from an enterprise security office perspective, that's 106 more sites to monitor from a physical security perspective or concern yourself about, as well as the logical security considerations with the data that's on those servers. So the point being there is that those small agencies or boards and commissions will not were not factored into the return on investment calculations, but certainly from a cost-benefit analysis perspective, there's significant benefit of moving those folks. So the ones that are left are the positive contributors to a return on investment, and I'll come back to that towards the end of the presentation. This is an example of some of the data centers that we have toured. Really, the message behind this picture is that staffing, data center staffing, was not factored into any of these calculations as well, because it's pretty nebulous in terms of identifying staff that maintain data centers other than an ETS. Generally, what you have is agencies, boards, or commissions doing the best they can with the skills they have available, and data centers. Data center staffing is not. It's an ancillary piece of their work, not a dedicated resource for data center. Getting on to the project here, this is really a facilities project, and we're working as such with Department of Administrative Services, Enterprise Asset Management Facilities Division, who are in the lead of this. They are the folks that contracted with CIRA Architects and PAE Engineering to provide us our original study. And the completed draft of that study was delivered to us in December of 2016. The data center, when it was originally built, as Sandy mentioned, was the expansion of the power was planned, and therefore, when the original building on the original build, the cabling, piping, and ducting systems, and the space for the additional UPS and generators and the concrete pads to set the new equipment on were all built in advance with that expectation. So much of the capital cost associated with building out power has already been spent many years ago. The baseline options, or the project itself, and we'll call it option one just as we get into a couple of the other options here. This was the original engineering was done in August of last year. The draft was presented in October, and as I just said, the final updated power study was delivered in December of 2016. It includes the third transformer, the switch gear, the diesel, the UPS or the battery backups, the power distribution units, the chillers, and the pumps. And that is the base project. When we move on to some of the options, there was 10 different options that were presented. by the engineering and architecture companies, and there were only two that we thought worthy of bringing forward at this particular point in time. One was that we put vented chimneys on top of the racks, such that, and it's all about air handling here. And then the second one was creating hot and cold aisle containments. Again, air handling, making best use of your air circulation capabilities. These two options totaled added an additional $519,000 to the project cost, and it was estimated that the based on the power consumption, that there would be a 3.87-year return, or about 4-year return on investment for just these options here. So I thought I would present those as recommendations to add to the base project. This graphic here represents 3 years of energy usage averaging across throughout the data center. And you notice that bar on the left there is current day. The other two, baseline option one and baseline options two and three, the first one, option one, that is the project itself and what would happen if we upgraded the power capacity and then filled up the data center. So it's a projection, projected usage based on fully utilizing the data center. And it's broke down. You can see the largest part of our power consumption is through the servers. That third bar chart there on the right, that assumes that you do use vented chimneys and the hot-cold aisle containment, and thereby bringing your power consumption down. This is basically the same graphic, only in terms of dollars instead of kilowatts per hour. And the interesting thing about this is that with those additional options, we will qualify for Energy Trust of Oregon energy rebates. The virtualization exercise that Sandy talked about that ETS went through not so long ago, in July of 2016 of last year, ETS received a rebate check from the Energy Trust of Oregon for $84,350 just for that virtualization effort, and we would assume that they and expect that they are very interested in this particular project and how they can help out with rebate checks for the virtualization work we would do on this. This graphic is about the return on investment, and I need to talk a little bit about it in terms of the factors that would influence a return on investment. Certainly, the number of data centers that can be reasonably shut down plays into this, and over what time frame. How much of the workload is moved into the data center, the operations and maintenance costs associated with those data centers, and the capital cost avoidance, and then just the ancillary factors about around bandwidth increases or resilience that I mentioned earlier. The data centers I've alluded to, the kind of the classifications of them, where they're remote and may not make sense to move in just because of the type of workload and the importance of that workload. There are others that are good candidates to bring into the data center, but not for the return on investment purposes, more the benefits received from that. And then again, the candidates where we have some pretty a lot of servers in a larger facility that may not be purpose built, and so there's not only a return from a building operations and maintenance perspective, but also some of the benefit of being in a purpose built data center. So there are a lot of factors influencing the data center candidacy for moving in. Basically, what you have here is you have the migration funding, and I did include some white space liability. And just to explain what that means is that if we close down data centers and agencies, and Department of Consumer and Business Services is probably a good example of this, because they have looming capital improvement costs for their data center that their director wants to avoid, as well as some risk involved with that data center, and so they're working very closely to get moved out of there as quickly as possible. So when I say white space liability, what I mean is that once we move those systems into the data center, What happens with the space they've vacated? How long does it stay empty? What does it cost to repurpose it? So that's included in this conversation, as well as the agency's operation and maintenance and their capital costs. So the red dotted line is probably the one of interest. It represents an $18 million investment, although the $18 million is at the very high end of the range and assumes all options were captured. So the project was estimated at $13 to $18 million. The construction cost itself was just under $10 million, and then there was other costs built in around contingencies and around the project management and around the DAS facilities efforts that would go into it as well. So the dotted red indicates in this case we went on the low end. I'm sorry, $13 million. This indicates that, with the assumptions we've made about which data centers are good candidates and the fact that we could in fact move those data centers into the state data center, that we would be at a break even in fiscal year 22. This talks about the $13 to $18 million. This does not, those figures, I just make a point here of saying that figure does not include any staffing increases that the state data center may need in terms of the architecture and the engineering and the actual hands-on migration of agencies into the data center. So if this project were funded, we'd be back to talk more about staffing at a later date in terms of how best to move those agencies in. And the quickest return on investment, obviously, is a lift and drop from agencies into the data center. But as we learned back in 2006-07, when we first started moving agencies in, that's not a cost savings in the long run. What it does is it adds significant complexity and cost to the overall project. And so very thoughtful migration of these agencies is what's being assumed in terms of the return on investment. Finally, what I'd say here is that as we try to figure out from the Office of the State CIO perspective the best path forward in terms of facilities management, what's becoming clear to us is that the agencies need to move out of these spaces at some point in the future or invest in them and invest people in them to get them to where they need to be for the type of workloads that are being consumed out of them. And to simplify matters very directly in a way that makes sense for agencies is that we would advocate for that the workload of the state is in the state data center or in an ETS brokered cloud service provider. And certainly using cloud services as part of our cloud strategy going forward and as part of the vision of the Office of the CIO. And so what we're trying to figure out now is what are the best workloads that go into a cloud environment and how best to move them there and then how best to interact with them and make sure that we can get our data back, make sure that we don't experience a lot of latency or other kinds of issues that we wouldn't experience on-prem. But certainly it's a multifaceted forward approach or strategy to deal with agency data centers either at the SDC or in the cloud. And that is all I have today.
Questions? Rip City?
Thanks, Senator, Chair, Mr. Chairman. So I went on a tour of the state data center once. It's a nice operation you have there. But your state data center is, I believe it's a level 4 data center or something, or tier 4 or something.
Representative Nierman, tier 3.
Tier 3, okay. Yeah. Is it possible that there's a opportunity for savings by operating tier 1 and tier 2 or maybe just tier 2 data center there? I'm thinking that you know, like state police, I want them to be online at 2 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day. And so that's pretty clear that they need a good setup there. But like fish hatchery data or even you mentioned DCBS, I can imagine a lot of their data. If it's kind of offline for half a day or something like that, that maybe won't be so severe. Are there any possible cost savings by doing something like that with the remaining space that you have?
Chair Riley, Representative Nierman, we have Tier 1 and Tier 2 data centers in various places in the state right now, where if we wanted to consciously divide up workload based on its sensitivity or criticality, we could certainly build out another data center to that effect. If we downgraded the state data center, then we lose our reliability of the redundancy, the power redundancy, where right now in our power distribution we have A sides and B sides. If we lose power on one side, we continue operating, and that's part of it. Also part of it is the infrastructure, the mechanical infrastructure that goes in there. Generators do you need to back up the load that you're carrying? So you're probably, if you're talking about retrofitting the state data center and downclassing it, that would probably be more expense than to take another data center that is already at the tier you're talking about and building it back up and then splitting the workloads out. Would be my recommendation on that.
Can I follow? I'm kind of more thinking about. So right now you say you have Tier 2 data centers somewhere in the state of Oregon, but not at ETS. The only product that you offer is a Tier 3 data center there. Right. So you have some space that's not being used right now. So what if you had a new product offering, which was a Tier 2 data center? So somebody who's on a Tier 2 or a Tier 1 out there in Springfield or Klamath Falls or something, and offer them, say, you can get the Tier 3 package, and this is what the price is for that, or you can get the Tier 2 package to offer to state agencies and operate two kinds of data centers there. Not downgrade what you have existing, but in the opening space there, offer a Tier 2 thing. Then I don't know all the details, but you might save on not having to buy some chillers or not having to have generators or not redundant power, and there might be some savings there, and you can pass those savings along to a state agency that says Tier 2 is acceptable for us for our fish hatchery data. If that goes down for half a day or even a week, we can live with that. And then the state police might say, no, we need to be up all the time, so we're not going to talk to you that way. So,
Representative Nierman, I think the best way to answer that is that I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're advocating for is running two different tiers of service within the same facility.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that the data center was not designed and engineered that way. Anything's possible. I still believe that it would be more cost effective to build out a second site at a lower tier level with a lower service cost to those type of agencies than it would be to try to retrofit the data center into two different tiers, if you will.
Thank you.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, from an historical perspective, there were a couple of slides about kind of where the state data center began from a power perspective. On this issue, with the current state data center being at the Tier 3 level, at the time, that was a conscious choice. Many other states at the time that our data center was built did alternatively decide to build two sites. And the two sites were either a Tier 2 and a Tier 2, or a Tier 2 and a Tier 1. But they had some kind of geographic dispersion of the sites and had different service levels, but their overall costs from when Oregon evaluated that, it did not have the funds, and or from a variety of other reasons, it decided to build one single facility in Salem. So again, today's a different day. A lot of things have progressed. There may be other alternatives, but just historically, that was a conscious choice on the part of the folks at the time.
Thanks.
So, yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Just to follow up along in this conversation, it's quite interesting. Way back in the day, the lift and drop environment certainly had to be a wide variety of redundancy and capacity and whatnot. And I'm not sure what has changed over time, whether it's the infrastructure, the chillers, the power distribution units. What are those things that make having both on site more difficult?
Yeah, I would defer to Mr. Black.
You see my point. The lift and drop, there were some that were tier one or less. I mean, when you get right down to it, you're just stacking them in, and they look like the photograph of your closets. And then we, through time, finally we get to virtualization and keep moving on and whatever. So I'm curious why, if you've got 8,000 square feet available, or 7.5 or 7,000, whatever that square footage is available, what makes Rep. Nierman's suggestion just unattainable or more difficult to achieve? I guess I thought his question was a good question. I don't know the answer. I'm asking you. Thank you.
Chair Riley, Senator Lindsey, I would not say it's unattainable. And I would not say that it's not possible within the existing facility. I am merely speaking to the cost of the architecture and engineering and subsequent walling off of a second facility within the one facility, and then purchasing equipment, including generators, UPSs, chillers, whatever you need for a tier one or tier two data center. My estimate or my guess in that topic is that it would be more expensive. Now, that may be something that we should do some more research on, certainly, and I'm not implying at all it's a bad idea. I just think from a cost perspective that we would see more of a cost trying to retrofit that space than using an existing one. And there are some fairly decent data centers within the agencies that would be good candidates to provide those kind of services already without starting from scratch. And right. I wouldn't at all imply that we would start from scratch.
Okay.
Do you have something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. I'll probably have about four questions. And can you explain to quickly what a difference is between a tier 1, 2, 3, and 4? Or is that a easy question to answer?
Chair Riley, Senator Boer, it has to do with the amount of redundancy and how much equipment you have, the backup capacity that you have. So a tier one, you wouldn't have necessarily a diesel generator, for instance. You would rely on, and you wouldn't have backup power other than maybe a battery backup long enough to shut your equipment off gracefully. And up through tier two, tier three, tier four has to do with, so the mechanical and the electrical infrastructure, the amount of redundancy in place, the amount of physical security that's around that, whether you have atmospheric monitoring, whether you have video surveillance, do you have badge access in with a pin pad, and how many doors do you have to go through? Is there a man trap? All of those factors go into defining the different tiers.
Okay, that adequately answers it. Thank you. I assume that if we built this out, and it's, you said, between 13 and 18 million, can you do that in the next biennium, or is it a staggered amount you're asking for?
Thank you for the question, Senator DeWard. We have a 12 to 18 month project timeline, and much of that time is in the capital expense of building a generator. Those are built specially, and so there's some lead time there. I say 12 to 18 months because while it's really a 12-month project, how much lead time do we have to get started? So, yes, we could finish it in a biennium.
Okay. Go ahead. Have you calculated how much we would save by moving out of existing facilities, and do we have uses for those, or are they leased?
Chair Riley, Senator DeBoer, I'm sorry. The facilities, I can't not tell you today whether they're leased or owned. I think it varies agency by agency. And your question was, can we move out of those? Is that?
Well, there has to be savings by consolidating. So if we look at the $18 million and then the payback of what that would save, I just wondered if somebody had calculated that.
Yes, and it's reflected in this chart right here. It's very difficult to tell because those bars are so compacted.
Yeah.
But when you expand those bars out, you can see the reduction over the course of time in the agency data center capital through the cost avoidance and the data center agency data center operations and maintenance. You will see a corresponding increase in the state data center power consumption, and then of course I also have service providers up there. We're paying $2+ million a year to service providers, data center service providers that we could bring back internally. So to answer your question, yes, those costs go down. Yes, it was factored into the ROI, and eventually those agency data centers approach zero in terms of the O&M and capital costs.
And those are by year, not biennium. They're difficult to read. But you look at fiscal year 23 that you're actually saving the state money.
We're actually saving the state money. Well, you can see in the dotted lines up above there, you see the O&M savings and the savings in the cost avoidance. Those are those two upper lines. You can see that in FY18, or this next fiscal year, we will start saving money for the state as we move in the agencies that Sandy talked about, such as DCBS, such as OYA. Those savings that we are able to move those agencies with the stranded capacity reclamation is an immediate savings, and so that starts right off. Right
so would away. It be safe to say that by 2023 we're actually recouped our $18 million investment?
That's the red dotted line, and
okay.
It's indicating it's running right across fiscal year 22 right there.
Good. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about the graph. This graph's a fascinating graph, so thank you for presenting it. But the question I have is with regard to the big dark blue at the on the first 17-18-19 is the migration funding. That's the 13 to 18 million, if I recognize that correctly. So you know, tapering off a little into the 20, and that dark blue. If you remove that migration funding, there's not this, you know, substantial return on investment. Like, what did we get for the money that we invested? The O&M savings, the green dashed line that you have, doesn't quite look like it mirrors actively the agency O&M orange line that you have in there. The agency O&M line looks quite flat. And like you described earlier when you were explaining this, there's not a lot of detail here. So maybe it would be valuable to provide us with detail, because that orange block looks real flat to me, and yet we've got this green hash bar that is quite dramatic.
So, Sean, if you could work with them and get that detail for the committee, that would be great. Good
Certainly.
Idea. Thank you.
Certainly, Senator Riley, members of the committee, I'm sure there's a detailed spreadsheet behind this graph. So
I'm sure.
Chair Riley, if I may, just for clarification, the migration funding piece of that bar right there does not indicate the investment in the power. What it indicates is that we understand that it will require some funding for these agencies to move into the data center. We've experienced that already with Department of Consumer and Business Services and some of the others. It has to do with the architecture and the engineering design, the actual migration of those agencies. So the $18 million investment that we're talking about, or the $13 million investment maybe more appropriately, is the red dashed line that, that goes into the, that reflects an expense there.
Yeah, thank you for the explanation. I was having trouble marrying how that worked in my mind, so I'd love
we'll get the detail.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So I have a couple. If and when we do all this, the build out, and we get sort of full capacity or close to it, will that bring the cost to agencies down? Or how will that reflect your charge to agencies?
Trevor, I think you, just based on economies of scale, it will bring the cost down for agencies. But with that said, you need to understand that the rates, rate setting exercise is really what the agencies experience, and hopefully that will be aligned with what our actual expenses are, so you will see that decrease. It will certainly also, while the expense for the build-out will be reflected in the ETS budget, the agency savings from moving out of their spaces and not maintaining those anymore will be reflected in the agency budgets. So there will be some savings to the agencies by moving in from on the assumption that we establish rates that are affordable enough to compel people to move into the data center.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a very important piece of the whole conversation is what are we going to do to compel agencies to move in? And from my perspective, you know, market or less rates are helpful in that conversation.
So we'll follow up. What I really would like to know is the agencies that are already in the data center, will they experience some savings because of the scale?
Senator Riley, thank you for the question. Yes, again, because of the economies of scale. Right now, those original 11 agencies plus the other agencies that we've moved in since inception, they're carrying the load of all the infrastructure. And mm-hmm. So certainly we want to spread the cost of that infrastructure out to more.
Thank you for that answer. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the last meaningful slide you have a thing about ETS brokered cloud service providers. It's my understanding that that there's, I don't know if I have the number right exactly, there's like 10 or 11 agencies that are told that they're not allowed to go to cloud brokered services. Is that true? Or
Chair Riley, Representative Nierman, it's only true from the perspective that the procurement vehicle is not in place yet to consume on a general basis those cloud services. We fully anticipate working with the cloud providers, and we understand that there are certain workloads that work better in the cloud and some that really work better on premise. And a statement that they're not allowed to move is not entirely accurate. It's more that the procurement vehicle hasn't been put in place yet.
It'll be interesting to see pilot or somebody, some project that does that and see how that goes. I understand you're going to need to see how that fits in with how things work at the state and everything. So
some agencies have federal guidelines for their security and so on, and there may be some federal guidelines that prohibit any number of different things. We have to follow the federal guidelines. And some of those may prohibit using the cloud at this point. Yes.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, Mr. Black or Ms. Wheeler, if you could go to your slide that gives the three options, I think it's one of the last ones that talk about, you know, in the future what the agency's choices are going to be. Yeah. So wanted to focus on this slide. Just it's more than philosophical that I say that philosophically that I say this, but one of the reasons why, at least in my mind, the slide indicates ETS brokered cloud service providers is that today it is true that there is enhanced scrutiny on agency requests to use cloud services, in part because of some of the issues that Senator Riley mentioned around security. There is a new cloud services policy that the state CIO has promulgated to ensure that agencies thoughtfully and thoroughly evaluate the impact, the potential impact of utilizing a cloud offering, whether that be infrastructure as a service, software as a service, or platform as a service. Secondly, if you begin to think about some of the very, very large projects that have come forward to this committee and to the legislature at large, there is a potential if, as an example, the Department of Human Services or Oregon Health Authority with their integrated eligibility project with 600 servers were to decide on its own to contract outside of the data center, not consider any impact on the data center and simply contract directly, that may or may not be a good thing from a whole variety of perspectives. And so from LFO and how we evaluate things, and certainly the Office of the State CIO, we look very closely at these requests to use cloud services. And our kind of the first door is, have you evaluated whether or not a cloud provider that already has a contract with ETS, you know, could meet your needs, is an important question. Prior to an agency then being authorized to go out and access a different service provider on a different contract. As Mr. Black, though, indicated, there are some efforts to expand the list of cloud providers. I believe the primary one that you utilize is Atmosphera today. It used to be called Easy Street. They're a Portland, Oregon-based company, but there are potentially others that are coming online in the future. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay.
Can I ask one little follow-up? What agencies use Atmosphera? Do you know?
Representative Nierman, could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
What agencies use Atmosphera, the cloud service provider?
Right now, the online Medicaid eligibility program uses that for their development environment only. We have their production test and performance systems at ETS, so they're using it for development. We have the Department of Justice Child Support System. There, we have the state hospital high availability system over there, and some ancillary stuff beyond that. We also have agencies right now that are using the Microsoft Cloud, primarily for their Office 365 or their email and other services that come with that suite. There is a part of the National Association of the State Procurement Officers, the work that's going on in Utah right now, that will open it up to other cloud providers, including potentially Amazon Web Services, certainly IBM, and others.
Good, thanks.
Anything else? Thank you very much. It's been very informative.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Chair Riley, members of the committee, one thing I would mention, my understanding is that currently this request is not built into the DAS budget. It is something that, however, is being evaluated. If the Joint Ways and Means co-chairs decide that it should be brought forward to a subcommittee of Ways and Means, I would imagine it likely would either go to general government or to the capital construction subcommittee because of its facility connection. But I think there'll be more to come for those of you who are on the Ways and Means subcommittees in the near future.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the committee, and thank you all very much.
Great. Thank you. (Clears throat)